you know, we can't say that definitively because we don't have that transaction record. But in terms of the flow of data that we can get publicly from the CFTC, yeah, it's the large commercials have increased their positions basically at the same time as the – they've increased their net short position at the same time as the long index funds have gone long.
Are they speculating in that case then as opposed to a commercial?
We don't know. That's another part of what I argue is that the common view of how futures markets work is really wrong. The view is that you typically hear is that commercials are hedgers. They're these benign risk avoiders who are really beneficial to markets. And the speculators, there's always this wariness that they're, you know, on the verge of being harmful because they're such risk seekers. When in fact, we know for a fact that firms we label as commercials or hedgers sometimes speculate on the price level. Sometimes they speculate on the basis. They always speculate on the basis. And speculators sometimes are doing spread trades, all sorts of different things that are not obvious in their impact on the price level. So this is a very dynamic, complex game between people we or firms that we label hedgers and speculators, and it's just not as simple as people make it out to be.
Let me see if I can boil this down in simple parlance. Is it that when the long index funds were to buy, they would come in at a market price, and no matter how much they buy, they're buying at that market price. So by design, it's not driving the market up because they came in at, say, let's make it easy and say 550. That's where they came in, and no matter how many contracts they bought, it really wouldn't change the price?
That is basically the economist's argument, and that is so far consistent with all the evidence that we have. I believe when we get through with all of the postmortem, we will show that they probably do pay higher execution costs, the bid-ask bounce, as we call it, for getting in and out of the market because their positions are so large. But that's not the same. It doesn't move the price level.
Is there historical evidence that suggests that you're right? I mean, can you go back in time any place and take a look at another time and say there was this huge influx of money and it didn't really change the price, or what should have been the market price? It just bought more of those contracts.
I think that there's example after example after example of this. On the long side, the most recent comparable period would be 1973 through 1975. It's remarkable, Todd. If you go back and read the articles in the business press, popular press, farm press, you could just change the dates and a little bit about who the players are, and you have exactly the same arguments being proposed then. And then we also had proposals for very restrictive legislation in 1973, 74, and 75 against speculators at that time. The other thing that's interesting is we've seen in agriculture, the tendency is to argue that those kinds of waves of speculation drive prices down. And particularly when we see really low prices, there will often be accusations that it's speculators driving prices down well below their fundamental value. So, you know, you can find accusations against speculator almost any time you want and on either side of the market, which in and of itself, I think, kind of helps prove the point that they're not likely what's moving the market.
Now, are there things that are outside of your – outside of this, no, the index funds are not driving the marketplace higher that are different, or the speculators in general are not driving it higher? For instance, would the soft red winter wheat market earlier in the year be something that would show that, well, convergence didn't work? And so if the cash price wasn't right, then the speculators actually did drive the marketplace higher.
I think that's an interesting example that we're still working through. We're hard at work on research on that very question. And I think the wheat market right now actually is probably one of the markets out of all the commodity markets in the world that does deserve close research attention in terms of what's causing the divergences between the cash and the futures. It's occurred at some points in time for corn and soybeans as well, but not nearly to the degree that, that there is in wheat. So I will admit in that particular instance, I'm not 100% sure what's going on.
Listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, you can this afternoon. The phone number is 217-333-9455. That's WILL, 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Give us a call and you can talk to Scott Irwin this afternoon. Tell me what you think the fundamentals are like in the marketplace for commodities at this point.
Well, I'm going to stick to what I think I know a little bit about.
Okay, that's fine.
The corn and soybean markets in particular. We have definitely, obviously, seen a large drop in both corn and soybean prices since their peaks in June. And the real question, there are two real questions right now that I see in the marketplace for corn and soybeans in terms of fundamentals. One, what kind of crop size are we really looking at for corn and soybeans? And after the September USDA crop report, there's an unusually large amount of uncertainty about what is the real crop size due to probably things that your listeners are well aware of in terms of replanted acres and how those are counted. How productive are they likely to be? What's the impact of all of this unusual weather that we've had really from the beginning of the season? So I think that there's a lot of uncertainty about yields, and that's one of the key.
And then when you talk with Daryl Good, as discussions go about these index funds and what producers ought to be doing at this time of year, if the index funds don't have that big of an impact, even if they're rolling out, then they're not going to have an impact under your under what you're thinking. What do producers do to protect themselves, if anything at all? Do they need to protect themselves from the idea or the rumor that speculators are getting out?
No, not largely. One clarification, Todd. I think that we might find that during that very concentrated roll period when the index funds are going from one contract to the next, that there might be some small and rather fleeting effects in that they might be driving the price of the nearby contracts down and the following contracts up a little bit. But, I mean, I think we're talking about very small price moves that I think are reversed fairly quickly within a few days at most.
Now, can I ask you what it is? What is it that prompted you to write the article refuting what Michael Masters had to say?
Well, I've actually been at work on this topic for the last couple of years with a former graduate student in our department and also with a colleague down at SIU, Southern Illinois University. So we've been working on this, and if we just had good timing that we were beginning to think about this well in advance of the problems really erupting in the public sphere. And then this summer, I testified before Congress once and kind of became involved in the public debate. I also co-authored an op-ed piece in the New York Times. So I've been very much involved in the public debate. I thought that someone needed to step forward and present a forceful defense of, I think, what is by far and away at least the academic consensus about the efficiency of the price discovery process as it exists. There's a lot of wild accusations out there that need to be addressed.
And, of course, this deals more with crude oil, but it's about commodity markets in general.
Correct.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about your paper and crude oil and what Michael Masters has had to say. And if listeners would like to join us, they can give us a call at 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You're listening to the Harvest Hour edition of the Closing Market Report, a full hour of agriculture in the afternoon, right here on this radio station. I'm Todd Gleason. We'll be back in just about 2 minutes on some of these radio stations for the Harvest Hour.
WILL programming is made possible by Tires Plus Total Car Care, located at Prospect and Market View in Champaign. Tires Plus provides complete car repair and maintenance. More information is available at 366-3201.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region. Tonight, mostly clear skies, lows ranging between 50 and 55, except near 60 in Chicago, that along Lake Michigan. Tomorrow, sunny skies, highs will range between 78 in the north to 84 in the south. Great harvest weather in store for the region over the next week. No precip expected the rest of this work week and weekend, and no significant rainfall is shown on any models until the last couple of days of September. The prolonged period of dry weather will allow floodwaters to recede and ponds in those fields to evaporate quickly. After a cool night tonight with lows between 40 and 5 and 50, low temps for the next week will be mostly in the 50s. High temps next week will be mostly in the 70s to the low 80s across the two states, with favorable weather conditions for maturing crops.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Ridge Farms Incorporated, Allerton; Michael W. Walker Consulting, Urbana; Guido's, Champaign; and Ray's Heating and Air Conditioning, Urbana. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. I'm Todd Gleason. Just about 6 minutes left to talk with Scott Irwin this afternoon about the commodity markets and what's been happening in crude oil and the price of corn and soybeans and wheat and how the index funds have impacted them. Thanks for being with us this afternoon, Scott. Maybe you could tell us a bit about the connection between all of those marketplaces and the financial turmoil that's been happening in the world markets.
Well, to begin with, we have seen, to me, just an amazing transformation in our ag commodity markets in the last 2 years, to the point where now corn and soybeans are primarily valued for their fuel energy content. That's the dominant driver. So what happens in the crude oil market and our gasoline markets now tends to have more of an influence on our corn and soybean and also wheat prices by connection than we had never seen that before. So any turmoil in the crude oil markets is going to get transferred into our corn and soybean markets. In terms of our financial situation right now, basically, what we are seeing, I think, is best described as a classic bank run or panic, but it's on what some people call our shadow banking system that now exists off the balance sheets of our regular banks. And it's a liquidity and crisis of confidence problem, and it's hard to stop these once these kind of panics get started, and we're even seeing some spillover effects into our commodity markets. We hear rumors that some large Wall Street firms are being forced to liquidate some of their swap and futures positions to generate cash, and this is putting some downward pressure on our commodity prices. Actually, given the turmoil we're seeing in our financial markets, I'm actually a little surprised how well our grain markets are holding up. It shows, I think, how strong the fundamentals really are.
And the fundamentals would be the billion bushel carryover, which is fairly tight. I think less than a month's supply at the end of the season next year.
And the one overwhelming thing that the market has to always have in front of it in terms of setting price is the even with the somewhat diminished incentives for ethanol producers, are facing, starting the 09 crop year, with very tight stocks and not much prospect of expanding the total acreage pie. So we have this fight over acreage between corn, soybeans, and wheat that we've been repeating the last couple of years is just around the corner.
Which is stronger, the fundamentals in the marketplace or the financial fall off?
Well, I think you could say probably in the last couple of days, the market probably has more reflected the financial meltdown in our stock and securities markets. But I think once that gets under control, we'll return back to the other kind of fundamentals that we're used to.
You said that the panic tends to expand and sometimes moves into other places. If this is just in the shadow banks or the off-the-book banking system, relatively speaking, that's fine. But if it makes it into the banking system in some form, that's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that is why you're seeing the historical kinds of reactions out of the Federal Reserve Bank and our Treasury Department, because they really want to stop it from spreading.
Do you think that expanding the overnight swap availability of money for banks from one to the other is a good idea?
I don't think they have any choice but to do that right now. The real questions will be coming in at some point. Obviously, it will stop. And what are the potential inflationary impacts of pushing so much liquidity? It's just basically pushing cash out into the system.
Right.
What's now going to be the longer term impact on price levels? We'll have to see.
Is it printing money or pushing cash, or sort of the same thing?
I mean, technically, no, but I think practically it's okay to think of it that way.
Maybe so. Well, as we finish up this afternoon, what if any final thoughts do you have on the impact or not impact that the market should be watching for? And maybe you could take up convergence as a different issue.
Okay. I'll just stick with my advice to farmers and others is ignore all of the market chatter about the what the funds are doing. If they have any impact, it's very modest and it's short run, and you should be paying attention to what's happening to the price level over weeks and months and quarters, not these little higgles and wiggles that you see within or across a few days. And there you should just look at, you know, pay attention to the fundamentals of supply and demand. And that would be my advice there. In terms of convergence, this is a serious problem farmers have to deal with when we do not have right now as reliable of signals about the effectiveness of hedges in our commodity futures markets. Not only do we have a lack of convergence, but we have an enormous increase in the volatility of the difference between cash and futures prices. And to me, that's the main concern I have in terms of the performance of our marketing system.